never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to Skinon Podcast number 58. So,
insert joke related to the number 58 here.
There isn't one. It's four more than Studio 54. Which is on?
Is there a gag?
Yeah, Studio 54 has been shown as part of the Gaze Film Festival. It's on
the director's cut.
Yes, so I just wanted to get that. I mentioned
a nice plug-in.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, the Gaze Film Festival has some great films. So
it has the new Greenaway. I'm there.
Yep. So that's what is that?
But too shy is Studio 60. Crucially,
we're not on the Sunset Strip anymore.
Yeah. Is it this weekend or next weekend?
It's next weekend.
Next weekend.
Bank holiday weekend.
Yes. Oh, nice. 3 days on. What have you been watching, Darren?
Well, lots of stuff. Because I spent 4 hours watching it, let's talk about it. Watchmen,
yes.
The ultimate cut. Because Lord knows you need more Watchmen.
I hope we're not going to spend 4 hours
talking
about it.
There's only two ultimate cuts that I will watch. T2 being one, or the ultimate
edition. Is that the ultimate edition? Okay.
It's the ultimate edition of T2.
Because he doesn't do director's cuts, does he?
No, he doesn't. Yeah. No, and Stargate.
unsung masterpiece that it is, and not at all just a rehearsal for Independence Day.
Independence Day did not spawn 3 series that spanned 17 years. So, I'm sorry.
And granted Richard Dean Anderson that second lease of life.
Yeah. And killed Robert Carlyle's career.
Best MacGyver ever.
He's back this week with his directorial debut.
Oh,
we'll come to that and towards the end of the podcast.
There's a nice segue. So basically I am perplexed at the fact that Watchmen exists in the form that it does, because it's an unadaptable graphic novel, and you adapt it anyway. But not only do you adapt it anyway, you actually put a great deal of, like, it is, it's very carefully and very meticulously constructed. There's a lot of affection in it. There's points where Snyder, like, borrows wholeheartedly from, like, panel construction. You can actually pause it and compare it to the requisite section of the comic book.
That's all very admirable, but I have one question for that approach. Why?
Yes, why?
It is the Gus Van Sant Psycho.
Psycho, yeah, pretty much, except instead of adapting like a classic Hitchcock film, you're adapting a comic book.
The best regarded comic book in the world.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's a bit like trying to adapt Koinescatti into prose. You know, it's just something that doesn't quite work. Although, great soundtrack, speaking of Koinescatti. There's a lot of stuff that I like about it. I think the cast is generally quite good, even if they don't work well together. Even though, like, it's shot, directed, and acted like these characters exist in different films, which is a smart choice.
It has the incredibly underrated Billy Crudup.
Yes. And
Jackie Earle Haley, yeah.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to offend you horribly.
No,
so Matthew Good is not terrible.
He doesn't look like the comic, but he's not bad.
He's not.
But like, okay,
he has the arrogance down pat.
And the decision to give him a German accent kind of perhaps misses the point a little bit.
Maybe.
Well, his name is Veit.
I think the idea was originally, though, that he was like a person who escaped the Holocaust rather than a person who had a secret Nazi history, which
but
is apparently
because he is like Aryan.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan, I like as the comedian.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan's perfect casting.
There are 3 examples of perfect casting right there. Jeffrey Dean Morgan's comedian, Jackie Earle Haley for Rorschach, and Billy Crudup for Documentary.
Not Patrick Wilson? As, like, a lovable schlub?
Funnily enough, Night Owl... I've always found Night Owl not a most particularly memorable character. But Patrick Wilson does bring a warmth.
He's the audience surrogate, so...
Yeah,
he's always going to suffer as a result.
Yeah, so I think any problems I have with Night Owl... They're not Patrick Wilson's fault. I'll have Patrick Wilson. And as I say, I don't mind Matthew Good. But then we get to Malene Ackerman.
She's a problem.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's dull.
But Cara Fugetti's not.
Yeah, she's great.
Who?
The older one, her mother.
Regina.
Who's great and should be in more stuff.
But then I saw San Andreas.
She was not the problem with San Andreas.
True.
Except for the fact that she plays a character who causes the movie to happen. That is the only way that she is related to the
problem.
Are
we saying her and Regina causes earthquakes?
And the way she looks at you.
Yeah.
Hello, Mr. Carlo Gugino.
Yes, avid listener and long time fan. I like it. And I think, actually, the production design is quite fantastic on it. Like, I think that...
As a recreation of the book, yes.
But I mean, even just like little choices, like the soundtrack by Tyler Bates, which is influenced in part by stuff like the Blade Vangelis' Blade Runner soundtrack. You have like those wistful sort of saxophone stuff walking through the streets. You've got like grainy, cold, like sort of like taxi driver approach to filming New York. You've got like,
but that's a problem in and of itself because, like, it's referencing a lot of stuff that just we have heard before and applying it to this context of adapting this famous book, it draws comparisons that doesn't do the film any favours. Like, it's just aping a lot of stuff that's come before, and to what end?
Well, like, I actually am a big fan of that approach in terms of, I think the smartest thing the film does is that it, although it's set in an alternate history, it's not really preoccupied with the relationship of that world to our world. It's more a world mirrored in pop culture. So, for example, Vike becomes Gordon Gekko. Or, it's shot in the style of Taxi Driver. Or the soundtrack is taken from Koin Iskatu and Philip Glass compositions.
I see, there's a link in. I like that, yes.
Yeah, and all that sort of stuff. Like, I think that that's clever. I actually think that's a great way of approaching the source material. I'm less keen on the way that the script literalizes absolutely everything.
One of the most noticeable aspects of that, the soundtrack choices besides the score.
Yes. A little on the nose.
Or like a funeral scene. Let's play The Sound of Silence.
Yeah.
One of them is taken from Batman and Robin.
The beginning is the end of the beginning. Yeah. And the end is the beginning is the end. Yes. That is actually pretty good. They use that in the trailer. But I mean, even the
design choices, actually, the character design choice. Like, Ozymandias is based on Chris O'Donnell, isn't it?
It's based on the bat suits, the nipples and the asses.
Which I think is a very nice true choice. And again, like, Rorschach's voice is modelled on Christian Bale, which is a nice sort of frame of reference. I think that stuff sort of works. But, yeah, in terms of, like, literalization, like, saying the word Watchmen repeatedly because the audience don't get that Watchmen might be, like, a metaphor related to a phrase that has thematic ties to the story rather than a literal representation.
Who watches the Watchmen.
Yeah. Or the bit where, Rorschach, who is, like, a sociopath, says, you know, Veet, very effeminate, possibly homosexual, must investigate further. That's a line that's meant to reflect on Rorschach as a character. However, apparently, when the people who are writing the script read it, they're like, no, Veet, definitely a homosexual, so let's put a host of gay porn on his computer so the audience will get that later on. Or the bit where Rorschach, at the end...
So sexuality is a binary.
Yeah, apparently. And, like, at the end where Rorschach, like, has his big scene...
This is Zack Snyder you're talking
about. Yeah, it's true. Everything is black and white.
Yeah, there is no room for ambiguity or nuance. Like, when Rorschach's final scene has him becoming a Rorschach pattern.
I know, that is just which so is thunderingly, deafeningly obvious. Yeah. It's dreadful choice.
And, I mean, despite all that, like, I think there are elements that do work. Like, I think it would have worked a lot better as a miniseries.
I think that's everybody's thoughts on it. Terry Gilliam was supposed to adapt this at one point back, not long after it was published.
Yeah, in the 90s.
Yeah, and he tried, but he ultimately conceded the best way, if you're going to try and do it at all, would be as a miniseries. Yeah. I just would love to have seen what Paul Greengrass might have done with it. Because before he made 1993, this was going to be something he was going
to do. To speak to Gilliam, when I was talking to him,
name dropping.
Could you pick up that name?
I'm actually going to quote him directly from when he was talking to me. Because he goes, old Zack Snyder got in there with that one. I thought he started brilliantly and then fell off. But what was the problem that we were having with our own script? The more you condense it, the more cliched it become cliché characters, cartoon characters, and not Watchmen. He also had the problem that The Incredibles, the Pixar, stole everything. That was a funny Watchmen. It was wonderful.
Well, that's the thing.
The Incredibles did a great job of adapting Watchmen, and a lot of people didn't realize it.
And even the Fantastic Four. It's the best adaptation of the Fantastic Four that exists. Prove me wrong, Josh Trank.
I doubt you will. But there you go.
I'm willing to concede that the Fantastic Four might be good.
It's not going to be the Incredibles. But it does add credence to this idea that television is the best place if you want to create a story with depth.
Well, that's it. Like, I mean, I think.
Although I'm waiting for people who are watching True Detective at the moment to rebuff me on that.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, the second season. Yeah, the second season has generated a polarizing response.
There are some serious.
And it also has a Leonard Cohen soundtrack.
Speaking of which, nice dovetail.
There are some serious amounts of stuff on the internet now. Was why are people still watching?
Which is really, I find
Colin Farrell's haircut.
But I mean, like in terms of kicking a show, like kicking a show for the sake of kicking a show, like it is not the worst show on television by a mile. It is.
It's just not True Detective.
It's not as good as it was. Yeah. But I mean, to get back to Watchmen, and we'll finish up on this. It's just, I think the bits that work are the bits that you could strip out. Like, the bits that are taken pretty much from the issues and you could strip out into a TV show. Like, I think the sequences work very well. So, like, the introductory sequence, as Gilliam said, the first hour or so actually works quite well where you have
the opening credits are, I have to give them credit. Because they do fill in a lot of the backstory in a wonderfully visual way.
Yeah.
Because
It's very Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, but it cuts through a lot of the stuff that had to cut through anyway.
Like, I mean, it's weird to me that we haven't had more alternate universe or history stories, that it's not a genre the film has really delved into.
There's the Confederate States of America.
Yeah, but that's a sort of a fake faux-umentary or mockumentary sort of thing. Like, I mean, in terms of, like, narrative, like, it astounds me that there's been less of a bandwagon to jump on stuff.
You'll see with the 1923.
The Stephen King film.
Yeah.
Mm.
But yeah, so no, I think...
But then again, you could make an argument that, hell, X-Men Days of Future Past does that.
Yeah, and I mean, it could be...
Mercilessly.
I'm going to go for Phillip's favourite one. The Truman Show. Forrest Gump.
That's not really an alternate history if you just pop the guy into existing history. Like, I mean...
Here's President Kennedy, and who are you, young sir? Gump. Gotta pee. I don't believe the young sir has to pee. You're spitting on the president right there. You disgusting.
But hey, at least it's on the
film.
BBC's top 100 American films of all time.
Okay, I want to meet any critic who voted for Forrest Gump on that list. Anybody? Because we is going to talk.
Just admit it publicly. Admitting you have a problem is the first step to a solution.
I have a problem with Forrest Gump.
What? Okay.
No, just...
Ugh. Okay, so Watchmen, appreciate the experiment, love some of the scenes... Doesn't really work at all, but probably never really could have.
Well, as far as
which sounds just like the response I had to the theatrical cut, which is the only one I've seen, and it seems to be most everybody's response to Watchmen anyway.
Yeah.
As far as Zack Snyder films go, it is
better than Man of Steel,
it's
we
in
know.
The middle.
Well, okay.
Towards the top.
Well, how? Okay, well, I can think, like, of the. Yeah, I'm thinking of five, and it's the third.
Yeah.
That's about it, yeah.
I'd probably go third, yeah.
Yeah.
But you see, when I think of Zack Snyder films, I think of Dawn of the Dead and The Rock.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. He's got it. He's got
Dawn of the Dead, 300, Watchmen.
I would sooner rewatch Watchmen than 300 because you see 300 once, and if you rewatch it, is there anything new in it at all that you could possibly bring a new light on? No.
Well. Watching it again after all the sort of racial commentary.
That guy actually has an 8-pack, not a 6-pack.
Yeah. It's kind of layered oddly if you look at it. It's like there's one sitting on top. It's odd. Sorry, you notice these things. You don't notice these things?
Mercifully, no.
Okay. Cool.
Who watches the 300?
Yeah, over and over and over again.
Darren, apparently.
Yeah. And then, here's one that you guys will appreciate, Mooney Family Movie Night.
I always enjoy these.
These are great fun, right? So it's a veritable smorgasbord of great films to choose from. Present them to the family. Family votes, makes a choice. We all sit down and watch together. So,
Smurfs.
Oscar season, come and gone. Massive list. So we've got, on one hand, we've got like Whiplash. We've got Selma. We've got Birdman. We've got Boyhood, Ex Machina. We've got Theory of Everything. No, we haven't got Theory of Everything. I've got some taste.
Okay.
We've got
It follows Theory of Everything. It's not as bad as it could have been.
Yeah. We've got
there we go.
We've got we've got It Follows. We've got
a lot of all those good
things.
Films.
And the family goes. We're watching Kingsman. And I quite like Kingsman, but it's not. Birdman or Whiplash?
It certainly is. I haven't seen it. But, okay, you see, this is the problem. When I have to say something like, I haven't seen it, but, I already hate myself.
Well, you are a big Matthew Vaughn fan. I know that. I know that outright. You just gush about him all the time. Really,
it's a good thing Jay isn't here. Really, he'd be apoplectic right now.
Yeah, I think we've been and gone, so to speak.
Just, I've seen the Kingsman trailer. I saw it quite a number of times before it came out, there is nothing in it. In those trailers or any of the advertising that makes me think, that looks like a pleasant experience.
Yeah, I can sort of see that.
I'm coming from a position of hating Kick-Ass, of tolerating, well, actually, no, I like Layer Cake, and that's about all.
Have you seen Kick-Ass 2?
Yeah, Kick-Ass 2 makes Kick-Ass.
No, most because I saw Kick-Ass.
I liked Kick-Ass. I thought Kick-Ass was Kick-Ass like, as good. Far as like your Spider-Man, modern Spider-Man
films. I laughed at Kick-Ass a few times, and as soon as the film was over, I thought back on it, and I hated myself. And I said no, because those things are not funny. Those things are horrible.
Yeah, you're not going to enjoy Kingsman.
Yeah, you're not going to enjoy Kingsman.
Not at all.
But I mean, it's basically it's a mean-spirited Roger Moore Bond film. It's like an incredibly mean-spirited Roger Moore Bond.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And that's kind
sheer
of
sheer magnetism.
Darling. It's it doesn't advance the feminist cause.
No, not at all. It does like the opposite. But I think, in fairness, I think unlike the Roger Moore Bond films, it is aware of its own crappiness. Like I think its crappiness is the point in that you're meant to feel guilty watching, as opposed to the Roger Moore films where you're meant to laugh along.
No, but see, means that there's an awful lot of the fans of Kingsman are teenage boys who. They
yeah.
won't get that.
They don't
yeah.
they go that level. Any, you know what? I think you're describing levels of irony to these things that I have to wonder if they were taught.
Yeah, I know. I it's
don't
been
make me watch it to find out.
No, don't watch it to find out. But no, I mean, like, yeah, but I mean, the same argument could be made.
If
like,
I
can't believe I'm going to say this, but like, natural born killers. You know?
True. Well, like,
but it's natural born killers is a lot better than Kingsman. That's just well, that needs
that.
To be said, yes.
Well, like, what you're saying is that. It's a film that acknowledges its own shoddiness, and that you think audiences beyond its target demographic, which perhaps are too young, given how it was rated, funnily enough, to watch it, will recognise that shoddiness and perhaps might even feel a twinge of guilt for enjoying it.
Well, I mean,
if I want to feel guilt when I'm at the movies, I will go see a Joshua Oppenheimer documentary. Thank you very much.
Okay, so there you have it. Kingsman not as good
as
Sound of Silence.
Controversial
decision, though it might be. Watch it. We'll settle this at Oscar season. Yeah, we'll settle this
if
at Oscar season.
If that doesn't win next year's Best Documentary Oscar, I don't
that, know. Well, that just means that it's a great year for documentaries, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah.
I don't know. The Act of Killing lost 20 Feet from Stardom. And I like 20 Feet from Stardom.
I told you that was going to happen.
I know
20
you
feet,
did.
Yeah, 20 Feet from Stardom is great.
It's good
yeah.
fun.
No, it's lighthearted. Yeah, it's accessible. Like,
yeah,
it's
but that doesn't change the fact that The Act of Killing is definitely better.
Oh, no, I'm not arguing that. But I'm saying you can justify a win for... you can justify a win for 20 Feet from Stardom. If only because it's a documentary that you could show to people who don't normally watch documentaries.
Yes.
And I think that accessibility should be considered
that's
a factor
like
in these things.
Saying I could show The Imitation Game to people who normally don't watch World War II films.
Could
and
you?
I am not going to go down that
could, path. Could you really? Like, I mean, if they're not Benedict Cumberbatch fans, they don't like World War II films. Could you show them The Imitation Game and, like, have them not walk out in the room after 5 minutes?
Good point.
It depends how they feel about mystery.
I just hate The Imitation Game. That's my point.
It's...
And I know
it's
I'm going
better
to
than Kingsman. The Theory of Everything, yeah.
No.
Okay.
No, it's not.
What? Wait, hold on. Wait. Neither are good films. Just to be clear. But
No, but...
The Theory of Everything is a better film.
It is a better film. It's a better made film.
It's got a script.
And it actually has a cinematic look and feel to it. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, Imitation
it
Game.
It looks like a BBC film.
No, it's filmed a lot more cinematically. It has better cinematography.
It reminds me of Hawking, speaking of Benedict Cumberbatch, to bring us... Like, I mean,
full circle,
Eddie Redmayne wins the Oscar for the role that Benedict Cumberbatch played better.
Sorry, why are we going back to January?
Good point. Okay, fine. So, Kingsman, blah. Also, Ex Machina.
Yes.
Because let's talk about this, because this is great. Phil did not care for it.
Haven't
oh, you haven't seen it? Oh, sorry, it was Jay.
Ex Machina.
Jay
is in my top five.
For the year.
For the year so far.
It's great.
Adore Ex Machina.
It's a good old-fashioned science fiction, sort of low budget, small cast, intimate location,
yep.
Big ideas.
Three-hander.
Well, four-hander, I would argue.
Spoilers.
No, well, it's not really a spoiler.
I haven't seen it. I don't know.
Okay. There are four people in the film.
I know of three.
No, three is the, it's yeah. The other is not.
But that's the point.
Yeah. Well. Okay.
Okay. Sorry, we're
seeing this now.
If you've if you've seen the film, you understand. If not, we're just saying random sentences. But no, I actually think it's a very timely film in terms of. And I say this as somebody who has a deep appreciation of nerd culture, as like a 20-minute conversation about Watchmen will demonstrate. Mm-hmm. Nerd culture has a lot of problems with women, and I think that Ex Machina does a very good job of exploring, critiquing, and commenting upon those at a time when it couldn't be.
More
better. Popular. Yeah. It couldn't be, like, it is, in terms of a film for 2015, in terms of dealing with the way that certain sections of pop culture deal with feminism and with minorities and that sort of stuff. True. I think it's perfect time.
So basically what you're saying is, it's all about ethics and the representation of women.
It's journalism.
It's also about...
ethics in women and journalism.
But it's also about sentience and... emotion and emotional manipulation and what it means to be human. So you mean
that's a big science fiction thing. Yeah.
And it works really, really well.
It is.
All I know is I've seen every possible GIF that has been made about of the dance scene. And damn, they've got moves.
And
that alone I want to
I mean Oscar Isaac's dance moves. Whatever you may think of his character, he's a fantastic actor.
He's scarily intense in that film.
Yeah, no, he's
Mother
he's,
of God, he's so scary.
He is.
Holds out for Star Wars.
Is he's the good guy though, isn't he?
He's
he
be an intense good
I
guy.
Don't know.
He's
I thought,
not Oscar Isaac is the he's,
oh, okay.
the, he's thought, the creator. He's the you know
okay.
the,
I thought the bad guy was your man from Girls. What's his name?
Hang on, which film are you even talking
about?
Oh,
Star Wars.
Oh, no. Oh, sorry, in Star Wars.
Adam Driver.
Yes,
oh, sorry. Oh, yeah. No. If I came out of Ex Machina thinking Oscar Isaac was the hero of the piece, I may have missed the point of the film.
Can I use this this confusion to suggest we bring this section to a close?
Okay. Fair point.
Right. Should I move on to
Ex Machina is awesome.
Yes, go see Ex Machina.
That's a good conclusion, I guess.
And Scott Donald Gleason.
Yes.
That was good.
And Alicia Vikander.
Yeah. And it looks
and
beautiful.
If you want to know why Alicia Vikander is the next big thing, watch Ex Machina and you will understand.
She's great.
Yeah.
And Alex Garland is a good director. Great writer, good director.
Cool. Yeah, but... Yeah, he's... Yeah, but... He hasn't put foot wrong, really. I mean, did you know...
Sunshine. Wait. Third act of Sunshine.
Yeah, well, the film that you were making, you had to have that third act.
Yeah,
in Sunshine.
I'm sorry. I mean, yes, that there's problems with it, but I'm still.
I like it, but yeah, it falls apart. Really,
he's still, yeah, he's some talent.
Yeah,
you're kind of in awe there. It's scary.
I really like Alex Garland. I do.
Yeah,
because
The Beach.
Writes amazing.
Did he write The Beach?
He wrote the novel. Didn't he write the screenplay as well?
Yeah,
Beach is underrated.
Yeah, I think The Beach is fine. But Dread, sorry.
Okay, give me Dread.
Philip.
Okay, Philip, what did you watch?
Oh, my turn. Hooray. okay, I had two rewatches I just want to mention. First of all, because Jay has mentioned it a lot, especially when we crop up talking about the Coen brothers, which is no bad thing, I finally got around to rewatching The Hudsucker Proxy.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's fun. You know, for kids. But I think it, compared to some of their other stuff, especially at the time, this was the first film they made after Barton Fink, and it is lighter than that film, not hard, but it feels almost a little too light. I mean, it is breezy and fun, even though it opens with Tim Robbins stepping out on a ledge attempting suicide. That's not a spoiler. Like I said, it opens with that. But, maybe a bit...
Yeah, but It's a Wonderful Life. Has a similar motif. You know?
Yeah, but It's a Wonderful Life got there first.
So it can't be done ever again.
Well,
everyone knows you get one film on a particular theme or motif.
Well, almost, yeah. Because as soon as you... You know, it's like, Simpsons did it. As soon as you do something first, you know... if you do it well enough, someone else is there. Everybody else is just going to say, "Well, yeah, but." But I do like it. It's I think John Mahoney and Jennifer Jason Leigh in that film are just trying to beat each other at how fast they can talk. It's a joy to watch, actually. And Paul Newman just he's chewing on those cigars like his life depends on it. And Robbins is such a likably clumsy lead.
Yeah, I kind of miss Robbins as a lead actor.
Yeah.
I feel like he never went as, you know, I feel like...
I think once he had that cameo in Austin Powers, it's been downhill since there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, the Oscar. Whoops.
Dear old Muncie.
yes. But it is fun. I do like it. Just maybe a little lower on my ranking of the Coen Brothers films than I might have thought.
Well, I mean, when you're ranking Coen Brothers films, though. Like, it's,
yeah, I know. It's
one of those literal everybody's a winner type situations.
Pretty much.
Particularly you if you're watching them.
Amen. Okay, curveball. I rewatched Lost Highway. Eek! I mean, what the hell? It's David Lynch. It's the most David Lynchian. At least until you watch Inland Empire.
I was going to say Inland Empire.
Yeah. It's...
Dance Party.
Inland Empire is where David Lynch disappeared up his own arse.
But Inland Empire is still good. Scary good.
It's ambitious. Well, like every Lynch.
It's not as rewatchable.
Yes.
No. Like Mulholland Drive is the perfect combination of a plot which goes so far and then you go through
Lynch-y.
The rabbit hole.
Yeah,
it is perfect Lynch. Whereas
I'd argue Twin Peaks or the first season of Twin Peaks.
How long can you watch Inland Empire and still realise what's going on?
I've tried this. I have actually
it's like a little
this.
Thread down the rabbit hole.
No, that is a good game to play and I have done it. 57 minutes. That is precisely the point at which I thought, okay, I'm lost.
Okay, is it an event that does it, or is it just like
you check in
occasionally and it's like
no,
I'm lost?
I think it's more that that's the point at which the mood overtakes. But getting back to Lost Highway, that is feels like very much the precursor to Inland Empire.
So we got lost on the highway on his way to the Inland Empire.
Pretty much.
There's your box set. There's your DVD box set.
Because you start off with this. Okay, you've got Bill Pullman. You got his wife, Patricia Arquette. They're, vaguely noir setting. And then suddenly he brings home... He finds a videotape on their front door. At their front door. And he puts it in. And someone's filmed their house. Someone's filmed their room. Someone's filmed them asleep in the room. And they have no idea who's done this or why. Police say they'll keep an eye on it. But... What? Why?
Somewhere
then they go to a party. Then they meet that guy with the freaky face, and he geeks the phone call, and he's like, "I told you I was here." How did you do that? Ask me. And I'm freaking the hell out.
By the way, in case you haven't seen the film, this is actually probably more linear and more accessible than the narrative.
Not much. Not much. And then after that, it switches to the young guy. And
yes.
The stuff with the thing, and then the switch backaroo, and what? Again, it is great example of Lynch just letting the mood overtake you, because most of the time, I'm not sure what's going on. There is a part in the middle where there is a definite plot happening. But it feels tangential.
I know that it exists.
You know, it does. It definitely exists, but... Yeah. How it relates to the first third of the film and the final act of the film, I'm still not quite sure. There's a switcheroo there which reminds me of something like The Fountain, which we were talking about earlier, because there's kind of plots switching back and forth between each other in not necessarily any kind of concrete way, but it does happen. And overall, I don't know what happened, but I'm kind of glad it did. Yeah, I did. It always fascinates me to watch actors like Bill Pullman, like Patricia Arquette, dive into these Lynchian nightmares. And I have to wonder, but do they have any idea what's going on? Do they know what's happened here?
What do you imagine direction from David Lynch is like?
I don't know, but I'm sure it sounds like this. Any excuse for the impersonation?
What am I doing here, Dave? What's my motivation?
Don't you worry about that. That's my concern. You just do your thing.
I feel really bad when it comes to the David Lynch stuff, because I'm a fan of the more populist work. So I like Twin Peaks. I like
Twin
Blue
Peaks.
Velvet. I like Wild at Heart.
But they're all good.
And Mulholland Drive and stuff. And I like Lost Highway.
Yeah, because Mulholland Drive is really populist.
It is really populist. Like, it's the... If you're going to recommend a David Lynch film to somebody, it's that or Blue Velvet, right?
Because they're great.
Yeah, but that's also because they're accessible. Accessibility being a relative term for any David Lynch film that's
not
the straight story.
I'm not going to recommend Inland Empire to a Lynch noob.
Yes.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
But what, you know, every one of them, even something like The Straight Story, they all have their kind of
Lynchian elements.
Although Wild at Heart is just a scary film for the fact that Willem Dafoe.
Willem Dafoe is amazing.
I will eat your heart out, girl.
Yeah. The personification of something.
I've got to rewatch Wild at Heart now.
It's great, and yeah, I remember his teeth.
Oh yeah,
it's great. That's
Jussie Outley.
The wonderful thing about David Lynch films is that even if you can't remember the context, the images just jump out of you. It's fantastic.
There's a compliment in that.
Yeah. No. Well, for a director.
That's me.
I'm going to bring this back to way more populist stuff.
Please do.
Than those things.
Yeah, Watchmen and Lost Highway. It's been a bit heady so far. Go on.
So I watched School of Rock.
Speaking of populist choices from auteur directors, I'm gonna go out there and say it might be my favorite Linklater film. Controversial.
Yeah, but it's a very easy film to enjoy.
Yes, that's it.
Bernie is my favorite Linklater film.
Bernie's amazing. Well, yeah. Bernie's really
good.
Massively underrated.
And
see,
Jack Black.
I was about to say, do you have a secret Jack Black fondness that we need to talk about?
No, because I saw Gulliver's Travels.
Not year one, no. What?
Huh?
He was in year one
wasn't
he?
Yeah, I don't think I saw that.
Good call.
School of Rock is it's fun. It's, you know,
it's great fun. Yeah.
It's one of those. The kids are great.
It's one of those.
And Joe Cusack.
Yeah.
It's
who
one
doesn't
those
love Joe
light curveballs that Linklater throws in once in a while, like that, or Bad News Bears, or just. I like what he does.
Yeah.
Even Bernie, to a certain extent, is relatively light, even though it's a comedy about, you know, murder.
Yeah.
But Black.
It was deliciously black, though.
Yeah, and I think Bernie as well doesn't get enough credit for its start of the McConaissance. Like, I think that if you were to place it back, it would be probably that.
Or
the
Lincoln Lawyer. Lincoln Lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah.
But School of Rock, though, that hinges on Jack Black.
It does.
Yeah. And he's really good in it.
The one criticism that I can level at is that it has Sarah Silverman
and
doesn't use her at all.
Yes, she's nagging girlfriend, if correctly, as far as character archetypes go.
Yeah, but it does give Joan Cusack something to do, so you know that.
That's always good. Yeah,
Joan Cusack's great.
Because usually she's relegated to sort of, you know, minor role, unless it's Frostbite Blank, which she's great as well.
That's it. I remember, the Joans of the 90s. I mean, like, Joan Allen as well seems to have gone. Because I remember Joan was like a Joan Allen.
Joan Allen's in The Bourne, so, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and she actually makes the most of a role that could have become very 2D.
Yeah.
Now that you mention it, I miss Joan Allen.
Yeah, like, that's it. I look back.
Well, Bourne 5 is going to have Matt Damon back, so there's a chance Joan Allen.
Take that, Jeremy Renner. Think you can hold a franchise.
He can't.
No, he really can't.
I like him as an actor, but he can't. No.
But Matt Damon was just right here. That's the Bourne legacy in a nutshell.
It is.
You just missed Matt Damon.
Yeah. We've got pretty much everyone else. There's David Strathairn. Oh, Albert Finney's there. There's Joan Allen very briefly, but they're all here. And Matt Damon, just left.
When Matt Damon's not on screen, everybody should be asking where Matt Damon is.
Where are my Kems? Kems.
I just waited for Rachel Weisz to say to him, shut up about the Kems. Yeah. I'm just a chemist. Why do you think I have chems?
Everybody has their vices.
Hey.
Drop the mic.
I also rewatched Toy Story 3.
Great. Better than Toy Story 2? Or
best than Toy Story 2.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I can't say I'd go that far, but I do love it.
It has all the feels. It has them all. It is. Oh,
really?
If you ever use feels as a noun again, I will hurt you, and it won't be in the fields.
I know it is.
And the climax is amazing.
It is incredibly touching at the end. Just wow. The scene at
the penultimate scene and the final scene.
And I think it's good that they're sort of kept around as sort of Pixar short characters for God knows.
Toy Story 4 coming. So.
Yeah, but I would say Toy Story 2.
I would go. Part of me wants to say the original Toy Story, but that's purely.
Oh,
even though it is still a very.
It's a great film.
Oh, they're all.
They're all. Do what? You know what? It's. Yeah.
It might
off the air. Pick a day.
It might be the best trilogy. It might be one of the better trilogies ever.
Ever?
Yeah.
In terms of the fact that all three of them are exceptional.
Yes.
Whereas every. Like, if you talk the Indiana Jones trilogy, the second one's not as good.
Yeah.
If you talk about the.
Trilogy? Never mind.
Star Wars? Yeah. There were only three films.
If you talk about Star Wars.
Jedi.
Is the high point. And then, you know, Godfather has won.
Don't even go there. You
know, so, to have all three, Back to the Future, 1, 2, 3. So, you know, it's like this.
Back to the Future Part 3.
No, yeah, I'm saying 2 is the...
Is 2 the weak one?
I don't know, 3 is considered 2's
the
weak one.
I thought 2 is the one that sort of permeated pop culture.
2 is the like genius two. One where they mix it back in with 1. I mean, seriously, that takes...
You know, I like 2 and 3, but of course they're not up there with 1. That's the point. Yeah. Although I do have... It does make me giggle any time I hear that line. Shark still looks fake.
that was fun. So Toy Story 3 is just... Yeah, it's Pixar at the top of their game.
We'll talk about that later.
I also watched Monsters University... Which is Pixar, not the top.
It's still better than Cars 2.
It is.
It has Helen Mirren.
It's better than Brave. It is. Is it the third worst Pixar?
Yeah, I'd go there. It's just.
What about Cars? The original Cars?
No, the fourth worst Pixar.
Cars
Life is the fifth worst Pixar.
Ants was better than Bugs Life.
I take Monsters
University
over Bugs Life.
Yeah, the only time I will pick a DreamWorks film is Ants.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Although I do like the Bugs Life, but Ants is the better film.
Yeah.
I like Cars. Cars is. Hang on, now hold up. Hold on, you're giving me real
There's a lynch mob forming and not the director kind.
Yeah, it's not in any way particularly great or deep, but it is strangely watchable. I know what the problem with it is, and it comes down to the basic idea that you're in a world populated by inanimate objects.
Which is fine.
Yeah. It's fine, to a certain extent.
Yeah.
It worked like Toy Story.
Yeah, but their existence is very much dependent on the humans who play with them.
Yeah, whereas Cars, there's no humans in it, so why are they there?
Exactly.
And why would there be cars capable of carrying other cars?
It's not a logical problem.
It's stretching a metaphor to breaking point. And it just goes into a bit too kiddie friendly. But it is.
If there's no people inside the cars, why do they need windows?
Why do they exist?
Why do they have to drive?
Why are there roads? Who built roads?
Yeah. For goodness sake, cars
how do
only
cars
exist?
Evolve?
Cars only exist.
How do cars procreate?
Context?
Yeah, how do cars procreate?
Yeah.
Do they give birth to minis?
Yeah. Oh, I'd like it. Come on, you win the podcast.
Don't patronize me.
That was sincere. But I also think.
Worse again. That wasn't a good gag.
My car is parked outside. Why do the cars need to go to a motel?
Why does it not look like a car park?
And I mean, like, you say this, but like, and yes, all of this is equally valid.
Yeah, it's all based in a nonsense world, but there is just
there's no grounding.
There is no grounding.
And
but
it's very clearly meant to sell toys. Like, it's very clearly it exists to be the merchandisable Pixar film.
Oh my god, it sell toys?
Oh,
and
it did.
Well,
and it did.
Wow, that's, it still does.
Yeah.
It sells a phenomenal amount of toys.
Yeah, because, I mean, nobody's going to be rushing out for sadness dolls.
I want a sadness doll. But we'll come back to Inside Out later.
Fear. Because he looks like me.
I always thought more of a David Hyde Pierce in A Bug's Life himself.
Well, there we go. Yeah.
You've got the height, anyway.
Yeah.
But
you're right. We're going to move away from Pixar for a moment. We'll come back to Pixar.
Oh, we will.
Okay.
Well, but Cars is fine. It's watchable. But so God, does it lack branding.
All Pixar's watchable.
The last one that I watched.
Cars too.
Cars too. The last one that I watched was Batman. Yes.
Massively, massively underrated. We are talking about the 1989 Tim Burton version.
Tim Burton's Batman, yes.
What a car.
What a car.
I like
the second
Burton,
best Batmobile
after
the Batman from Batman the animated series.
That is one hell of a car.
But that is basically a tombstone on wheels.
I love the 1966 version. The 1966 Batmobile.
It is
just for retro shit.
That's fun, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
It is fun. I will give you that. It is a decent Batmobile, but it doesn't.
But unfortunately,
it doesn't armor.
Yeah. No, let's put it in the context, right? Na 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 na. Da da.
Have we not reached the point where we can ironically appreciate the joy that...
Never do anything ironically! Have I taught you nothing?
Frank Gorshwin's portrayal of the Riddler is pretty much Heath Ledger's Joker, except he's not allowed to kill anybody.
Where's the fun in that?
I'm going to say that Batman, the original series and the original movie, is better than Batman and Robin, so...
and well, Batman Forever.
Yeah.
You really don't
no,
like Batman.
I really hate
it's
Batman.
Not Batman.
I think it's harsh.
He's not Batman because he chooses... He's not Batman because he has to be. He's Batman because he chooses to be.
Yeah,
that's right up there with Superman causing 9/11 in terms... Or Superman
Batman
Deadly
chooses
crazy.
To be Batman in the Batman... In the Nolan trilogy, he chooses to be Batman.
Exactly. Because he's compelled. Like, being Batman is not, like, a psychologically healthy thing for somebody to do.
No, he's compelled to fight justice. He becomes Batman because he chooses the bat as his symbol.
That's
not because he's haunted by bats.
He's compelled to fight justice. He could have easily been, I don't know, Rabbit Man.
Could have been
maybe he was. I was trapped in lift once. The sergeant nibbling at my cake.
That's a really crap definition of choice. That's like I'm hungry, so I chose to cook rice, or you know, so I had the choice there. No, you were hungry because you ate because you were hungry.
But if he'd had a nightmarish experience with rabbits,
it would be a very different film.
On the day his parents were killed, yeah, it would have been a different film.
He could have teamed up with Echo.
No, Harvey.
Yeah. Dent or otherwise.
The different sort of Harvey.
Yeah. But actually, I feel like the sort of the Tim Burton films are massively underappreciated as a result of the Nolan.
You realize version. That it's not the Joker, it is Jack Nicholson.
It really is.
Yeah. Which is good in a way, because once you realize, okay, that's just Mad Jack. Let's talk about Keaton for a second. He's great.
Keaton's amazing. Keaton's massively underrated.
Keaton is great, yeah.
Even though he sleeps upside down, just in case you don't get that he's Batman.
Well, one thing about Burton films, they're not subtle.
Yes.
They're admirably dark, but they're not subtle. I mean, it's all this... I mean, cripes on a bike. Batman as goth.
Yeah, well, that's it. Like, it's Batman as a Burton protagonist, which means that, like... Well,
which
I think
makes
that,
sense.
Yeah, well, it's great. Well, I mean, like, the thing about Batman as a character is you can do anything with him, and doing him as a Burton protagonist makes sense. Like,
the
idea...
set is incredible.
The design,
because that skyscraper or whatever they're on at the final confrontation, that doesn't look like a model at all.
That's the point. Like, it's meant to look fake. Like, it's very clearly, like, an Art Deco Gotham that could never have existed.
Whereas Schumacher's one just goes...
Neon!
I'm sorry, why would you have an observatory in the hands of a statue?
How do you commute to that? Where is the car park?
Yeah, and why on earth do you keep your rare diamonds in the same exhibit as your dinosaurs? And why does Batman
kids love diamonds and dinosaurs?
And why on earth does Batman have pop out skates on his boots?
Because it happened one time and it was never going to happen again.
Because he had,
works for James Bond's gadgets.
Because he had Bat-Shark repellent in the 66 movie. So
yeah. But like, I like the idea that Batman as a character is infinitely versatile in that. And I think that one of the problems with the Nolan trilogy is the fact that it's sort of turned into this is what Batman is. In the same way that it seems to have turned into this is what DC superheroes are.
He became too grounded. He became
I love it. I think
some people do, but the problem is you have to, if you're going to rework these superheroes, and let's face it, they are going to do that, they have to try and divorce them from the image of the hero that the previous director set. Like, Burton was Burton.
And it's
Schumacher came along and just poured day glow and glitter all over Burton. Nolan came along.
Which meant that Nolan had a basically blank canvas.
Which was great. And he imposed his grounded realist version, and I love that
version.
I love that trilogy. Now you're coming along to Zack Snyder does Batman. And I'm glad to say that I'm probably going to hate it because the NFC is just
got
so
a different
poor.
Angle as well.
But it's a different angle.
Yeah,
at least it's not Nolan's Batman.
Batman,
and it doesn't tarnish the Batman I like.
Batman is responding to the threat that is Superman, and also Batman is older.
Yeah, I actually think like Affleck is a great choice for Batman, which will cause the internet fans to lynch me. Like,
because they're all listening to us.
Yeah, right now.
I actually liked the choice when it was made. So.
Yeah, and in terms of
Yeah,
but no, I was going to say, basically, I think Snyder has a great Batman film in him. I think he hasn't got a good Superman film in him to save his life.
So now he's going to blend the two.
So, yeah, it'll be half a good film, possibly. That's what I'm hoping for. Best case scenario.
There's just too much in it.
So half a good film, two-thirds a terrible film.
Yes, that's the Snyder way.
Yeah. I saw that trailer once for Batman vs. Superman. Has Jesse Eisenberg just wandered in from a completely different film?
Yeah, but he's having fun. More people need to be having fun.
Yeah, because so many people had fun with Man of Steel, didn't they?
And some might say that's the problem with Man of Steel.
No matter how bad the Lex Luthor is, right? No matter how bad you try to do Lex Luthor is infinitely better villain than anything that Marvel have come up with since Loki.
Yes. Oh, no, Kingpin in Daredevil. Who is basically Lex Luthor.
True. Evil Industrialist works quite well when he's not driven mad because he took the serum. Or
the 12th time.
I'm sorry, the serum that didn't work up until this point. How did he possibly take it?
We need a third act battle quickly. It's like that bit in Iron Man where Jeff Bridges is like, sure, I could get my lawyers to get me off this in a technicality and continue doing what I'm doing anyway while I control the company. Or, other alternative, I could have a giant metal suited rampage in the middle of Los Angeles that will undoubtedly end in my death or the public exposure that I'm mentally insane. Okay, I'll take option B.
It's Corey Stoll's bad guy in Ant-Man is
Jeff Bridges without the beard.
He's evil because he is given the serum. Right, that's given as the cause of his evil. Right, the fact that the serum.
He was not meant to be mentally unstable beforehand.
No, the serum messes with his brain chemistry, and that's what causes him to go mad. But the serum doesn't work up until right near the end when he first puts on the serum.
Is that the same serum that they inject in the minions to make them evil minions?
Possibly. Actually, there's a much better film.
Yep.
There's a much better
film. There's your first $1 trillion movie.
Yeah, right there. Yeah.
Banana.
Yeah. So anyway, we're going to move on to the news. Yes, at long.
I mean, that was fun, but, you know, we have a three-act structure, people.
I feel like I've just got a lot out. It's like, this is the ultimate cut of the Scanon podcast.
Yeah, this is going to last for a couple of hours.
Anyway. Enjoy it, folks. You're getting your money's worth tonight.
Yeah. Zack Snyder cut.
Don't ever link me to anything involving Zack Snyder.
Don't worry, the top 10 is in slow motion.
Yeah. No, I'm speed ramping it. Anyway. So, last week we had the news that the film board was going to rebrand. This week the film commissioner is leaving. The film commissioner of the Irish Film Board, Neisha Barry, is off to become the head of production at Pinewood Productions in Ireland.
This sounds like almost a superhero plot in small scale. There's background political changes and something's happening.
So he spent 14 years at the film.
Is he going to become like the supervillain or something?
Or has he been decommissioned?
No.
Or has he been injected by an evil serum?
Right. This is
no disrespect to Neisha Barry at all.
So yeah, Pinewood last May announced that they were setting up a facility or setting up a production company here, and now Nisha's going to manage it, and we're going to. He's actually spent 14 years at the film board, where he was responsible for bringing in international productions to the country. So,
cool.
Tudors, Vikings, Camelot, Star Wars Episode 7, all that kind of stuff. Nice. That he would have been facilitating all of that stuff. So we wish him well with the new role, and if the film board are looking for somebody to take over, I will happily do it.
That'd be great, because we'd have all the scoops.
And come on, Niall has like an extra hour in his schedule, which is worth like 20 normal people hours.
True, very true. The man's work rate is terrifying.
Yeah.
On news of Irish film, The Stag is going to be remade.
Why?
Because Warner Bros. Have bought down rights to it.
It's not a foreign language film. Is anybody explaining this to them?
Oh, come on. They do like British. They remake British films, for crying out loud.
Yeah, and they work so well.
They remade that at Funeral and stuff.
And Lord knows that was a much better version.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of one where they remade it and it was better. No.
All I can think is Wicker Man and ha 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 ha.
Not the peas.
No.
All I can say to this is, John Butler, if you're listening, milk them for all they're worth. Well done, sir.
Yeah, well, John Butler, co-writer on the original one, so now this one's going to be produced, executively produced by Rob Walpole and Rebecca Flanagan, who did the first one. So Chaz Treasure Entertainment, they're executive producers on this, and Warner's then.
Nice.
I'll tell you what, if you're going to go through this, I am dying to see who you pick to direct.
Yeah, I'm dying to see who they cast.
I imagine the cast would be.
Can we have any of the original actors back? Because I want Andrew Scott back.
Andrew Scott would be a very nice
But he wants Andrew Scott, period.
Who
doesn't want Andrew Scott?
Have you seen his scenes in Spectre?
I haven't seen Spectre, so no.
He was in all of like a second of the trailer.
Yes, but he's brooding over a computer, so you know.
So I'm set.
Yep.
In case you've missed this in previous podcasts, Andrew Scott is Niall's man crush. It's weird.
Why is it weird?
I don't know, it just is.
He's like Tom Hardy to normal people.
He's Moriarty.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Anyway, news from the IFI.
I preferred Natalie Dormer. I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah.
Carry on.
As far as Moriarty's go.
Yeah, Elementary is so much fun, though.
What's next?
The Palme d'Or winner, Jacques Annaud.
Jacques Audiard.
Yeah, he's coming to Dublin to the IFI French Film Festival.
That's in November.
Yes. So that shall be fun.
That is great.
So they're going to show a retrospective of his films. And so all his films are pretty damn good because he made a profit.
He made a profit and he made Rust and Bone. Those are two reasons alone.
The Beat That My Heart Skipped and...
Speaking of remakes, his film The Beat That My Heart Skipped is a remake of a little scene film called Fingers, James Toback film, with Harvey Keitel.
Yeah, it's good. So there we go. So yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. Speaking of film festivals that are on in November, the Cork Film Festival is on in November, and it's going to have a big documentary focus this year. It's going to be nearly half the program is going to be made up of documentaries.
Wow.
So and because it's the 60th anniversary of the festival, and this is what they're doing, but they're also going to make two new prizes for documentary films: one for features, one for shorts. So.
Makes sense. I mean, one thing we do well in this country, I find, is documentary.
Yes. So
more of that, please.
And one of the most promising documentary filmmakers in this country, Tiger Sullivan, is going to be on the jury for this.
Nice.
Ooh.
Yep.
He knows from documentary.
Exactly. So we're in safe hands. Or at least the festival is in safe hands. So.
Good. Good.
Yeah. So that's on top of the stuff that they've already announced and the talent development program that they're going to be doing and. And they film a Fitzy's thing that's coming up in August. So.
It's like you said, they're going big this year.
Yeah.
60th, you have to.
Exactly. Yeah. So that before the full press release is on the website, so it's really long. Then, news of Brain on Fire, because every week we have to have news on what Jared Barrett's doing with Brain on Fire. Tyler Perry is now on board.
He was fairly good in Gone Girl.
This news would have been a threat.
Yeah.
This is actually pretty promising. Yeah. Only because of Gone Girl. He's really good in Gone Girl. It still surprised me to say it, but yes, there it is.
Yeah, so he's going to play the newspaper editor at the newspaper.
Oh, please say he's playing as Medea. Please.
No, really?
Wouldn't that be great?
No.
So Chloe.
No, no, it would not be great. It would be the opposite of great.
So Chloe Grace Moretz's character is a journalist, and he's her editor at the New York Post. So we have Chloe Grace Moretz, Jenny Slate, Thomas Mann, Carrie-Anne Moss, Richard Armitage, and now Tyler Perry. So that is quite a cast.
It's a phenomenal cast.
Yeah. So that's still filming at the moment in Vancouver.
Do you reckon he knows who Jared Barrett is?
He does now because he's directing.
Yes. Much like that Fincher incident. That must have been an awkward first day on set.
To move away from film onto the world of football, Louis Van Gaal called Chris Smalling Mike Smalling in the press conference the other day. So that, you know, if you can't even
not unheard of
your own players correct, then you know.
What are you all talking about?
When Tyler Perry was hired to
No, is this Tango? This football I've heard so much about? Let's move on.
Yes, moving on. We're moving on to the
Shifting
top 10.
Goals. Wow, that was record fast through news.
Yeah, well...
We didn't give ourselves much choice.
Wow, we spent a lot of time on it earlier. At number 10, In-N-Out and hopefully gone for good, it's The Gallows.
This got in the top 10. I am disappointed.
One star...
That means I won't get to make any quips about it hanging on in there next week.
Oh. We might take you to the bloody gallows if you keep up with jokes like that.
Oh.
Yeah, so this is... Not a good horror film. Anyway, at 9, it's Song of the Sea.
Oh, now that's hanging on in there.
Yeah, so Song of the Sea dropped 38% in its second week, and it It made more than 100 grand overall, but it's it's still doing the biz in a number of cinemas, but unfortunately all the screenings are early in the day and stuff, so
And it, also it's got big competition coming
massive
out.
Yes. Competition. We will talk, I'll talk to that, well I'll mention it. So Sign of the Sea is for as an example in Cineworld from tomorrow. Sign of the Sea will be on 2 screens, Minions will be on 6, and Inside Out will be on 22
screenings per day.
See, I would feel bad about that if Inside Out weren't amazing.
Yeah, well, that's true. So,
but yeah, Minions is then.
Minions was on 9 last week with Simon C on 2. So
okay, so that's unfair. That's crazy.
But the times were like 10 and 12, you know.
So. Yeah, and you're never going to get kids out of bed for that.
No, we might get into it for 12, and the 10 one was a bit of an ask. At 8, still doing really good business.
Yep.
It's Amy.
I'm thrilled about this. Yeah. We're actually recording this on the 4th anniversary of Ms. Winehouse's passing. And I'd say anybody who's considering going to see it, go.
Yeah.
Because how often do we get a look into... this makes so much use of just home video footage. And there's a wealth of it. And it's not often you get an opportunity like that to use it and use it well to create a story and paint a portrait of somebody who deserves to have a portrait painted like this. And it's really well done.
So what do you think of the sort of the backlash, as inevitably happens when a film or a person is successful?
What, that it's cynical and exploitative? You're making a film about somebody who lived in the public eye, lived a very public life, died in the public eye. Unless there's going to be some kind of revelation that maybe life wasn't so bad, but of course that's not going to happen because we all know she had a very sad life and died a very sad death. So, of course it's going to seem that way because the life was exploited, so anything that's going to show that life is going to feel exploitative.
Okay.
That's fair.
And that's my 2 cents. What's your opinion? I'm just putting that out as a rhetorical question. Let us know, listeners.
That's philip@etskinon.com.
Yes, thank you, and thanks all at our relative Twitter pages.
At 7,
bow, 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 bow. Is that, are those the actual lyrics to Pony? Bow, bow, bow.
Yeah,
that's pretty much it.
It's like na 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 na, except strippers arrive.
At 7, yes, Magic Mike XXL. So I was having a conversation with a girl in work the other day, and she loves it. She thinks that it is the absolute amazing, bestest film ever.
That's great, but does she think that for any reason beyond the fact that Channing Tatum is stripping?
It's not just Channing Tatum.
Okay, all the guys stripping.
You're underselling the film, Philip.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Matt Bauer is crying somewhere.
Poor,
Matt Boomer, sorry.
Matt, poor Matt
I couldn't
Boomer.
Even.
You're thinking of Matt Lauer, weren't you?
Possibly.
Jeez, I don't see that.
But anyway.
So I've been kind of thinking about Magic Mike XXL, as one does. And so, you know, at the end where they do, like, their striptease that's themed around, like, the things that they really passionately care about?
Yeah,
I'm kind of wondering.
I'm deeply concerned about one of them.
Yeah. I'm kind of wondering what a theme skin on striptease would look like.
Oh God!
This is like this is gonna be like when we proposed recreating the Nymphomaniac posters a couple of years ago. Yeah, we're not doing that.
Fun stuff happens in skin on board meetings.
There we go. Yeah, imagine my guy.
Really fun.
It's a lot of fun.
It's just a little bit too long for its own good.
Yeah, but
make your own jokes. Let's move on.
At 6. Too long in the tooth for its own good is Terminator Genesis.
Yeah.
Too convoluted for its own good.
Initiate system reboot.
I recommend
you read
Darren's excellent review because it is. Wow.
Is
it an excoriation as I hope?
No, it's
not as bad on low on as some people.
I really don't hate it in the same way that I hate other films that are currently in the top 10 and maybe standing directly above it. which film am I talking about, listeners?
Let's just say it involves another lumbering dinosaur.
But in terms of as an example of the Hollywood franchise machine and the idea of the past as a place that you revisit so often that you, like, every time that you remember something, you actually override the memory, which is an interesting neurological fact. So the idea that Terminator Genisys exists as a memory of those as those James Cameron films.
All it remembers is some of the best scenes from
them. Destroyed and warped.
String a narrative around
it. Yeah. Like, to the point where, like, Robert Patrick's Terminator shows up in 1984 because those are two Terminator things that we liked, right?
Okay.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
Now that
thanks for ruining that.
This.
It's still better than two. Still better
than
two.
Whoa!
Darren was just escorted out of the Scanon podcast booth. it's better than three and four.
Maybe?
Yes.
You're almost making it sound like I need to see it.
No, you don't need to see it. Yeah.
You're right.
You need
to
see Matt Smith.
Matt Smith, like Matt Smith. I think Matt Smith is great. But I think Matt Smith is generally...
I'd like to say I hope he's better served by this script than he was for The One for Lost River, but script.
But here's the thing. I think Lost River would have worked a lot better if it cast... what's his name? Ian, whatever his name is from Game of Thrones.
Ian de Kestecker.
No, the one from...
no, he isn't.
The one who plays Ramsay. What's his name?
Ewan...
Whatever his name is, but yeah, basically
it is Ewan.
Ewan, but he's basically he is an evil Matt Smith, and once you see it, you can't unsee it. It's amazing.
Matt Smith does evil quite well. I mean, so
when he's not wearing a dicky bow.
Yeah, no, I like Matt Smith in Terminator Genisys.
Is great, even though he only has like three scenes.
Yeah, but basically his whole existence is a riff on his Doctor Who persona, which is quite
clever. This is an example of pop eating itself.
Yeah. But surely this is a peril for pretty much any Doctor Who actor, with the exception of Peter Capaldi, who always will,
or Chris Ferguson,
who will be Malcolm Tucker forever and ever. Yeah.
Well, because Christopher Eccleston is going to be defined forever as Malekith.
Okay, fine.
I was thinking Jude myself.
Such a waste of a character, that. Anyway,
if you're talking about wasting actors in Marvel as Marvel villains, apart from Corey Stoll, we have
Chris Reckles. We have pretty much every villain who's not Loki. Hugo Weaving?
To a lesser extent. I was going to go with Lee Pace.
Yeah,
as a cosplayer who really likes Smurfs and really likes Thor. That's pretty much the character.
A Smurf Thor.
A Smurf Thor. That's Lee Pace.
So he's the Smurf Thor. The Rock is Samoan Thor. Basically, everything's just a variation of Thor.
Yeah, Aquaman will be Game of Thrones Thor.
Underwater Thor.
Underwater Thor.
Let's just talk about... Let's just say that Jurassic World's at number five.
Yes, Jurassic World's at number five.
Because we hate it.
And because we have to commemorate this. It is now the third highest grossing film of all time.
Unadjusted for inflation.
Unadjusted for inflation.
I feel the need to add that.
Yes.
I think I'll commemorate that in, say, akin to a way I'd commemorate, say, I don't know, the Hindenburg disaster.
Jesus, talk about, like, making light.
There's nothing to be made light about in Jurassic World. It's...
No,
sorry, I was making...
of the debt of...
everybody on the Hindenburg. It wasn't even a pun to do with helium. Like, I have more taste than that.
Taste? What's this you speak of?
Yeah. No, I recommended Kingsman earlier in the podcast.
Jurassic World also has become the most successful film in Ireland as well. So it has passed 4 million, which is a mark that no film passed last year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Star Wars is definitely going to surpass it here. I know it's going to surpass it worldwide, but it's definitely...
Star Wars is going to surpass everything everywhere.
Will it beat Avatar? That's
no, it won't beat Avatar. Not it's beating Avatar.
Really?
That was a film.
Over the long game?
No. Avatar is that's an unassailable lead. That is...
The problem is, Star Wars won't do it because even though it is going to be ginormous.
That's probably going to be $2 billion movie.
It's still
dependent
on
$2.7 billion.
Exactly.
Billion.
I know that.
I like the way we say this, like it's a failure on the part of everybody involved. You know, work harder, guys. Work harder, Abrams.
But Lucas, he's not going to stand for this.
You're going to be replaced.
Here's the thing, right? So the cost of buying LucasArts, right? So $6 billion or whatever. You're going to recoup it in like the first three films, in the first two films.
From merchandising, I imagine.
They've already made it back. Yeah.
Like, You imagine you just sit there.
Unless you're Dorn and Kindersley and you're selling Phantom Menace books.
Right, cause
it's a pretty safe
here's
bet.
Here's the other ones, right? Because they spent $7 billion on Pixar, right? Good or bad investment? I'm going to say good investment. Yeah. I'm going to go with the $4.5 billion that they spent on Marvel.
That's the great
that
investment.
That is Mark.
compared to... Because Pixar was not necessarily the best financial investment.
At the time.
Well, I mean, even afterwards, like the Cars 2 isn't Cars 2 rumored to be a direct result of Disney saying make some money? Isn't that the rumor?
I don't know. John Lasseter loves Cars, and he was put in charge of all Disney.
To be honest, I believe either story.
Okay,
they both make sense to me.
Okay,
but anyway, Jurassic World is doing the business at the box office. It is not.
It's not doing the business for me.
It's fine, but it's just not good.
You're being far too kind.
You should watch the first one again.
Yeah. Oh God.
Everybody should.
Yeah.
At four.
Oh, no.
Oh, you're going to rue this.
I really wish Jay were here for this.
Yeah.
The one night only, André Rieu's 2015 concert from his hometown of Maastricht.
Hometown of Maastricht? I thought he was... Oh, you're right. I thought he was Austrian for a
second. Believe the guy who lived in Holland.
Okay, fair enough. André Rieu's...
You make it sound like he's a national folk hero there.
He's beloved in Holland.
He's beloved everywhere. Go to any classical record section of any, say, of your high street store like HMV. Half the classical section is André Rieu. Heaven forbid, you know, some modern composers might get a look in. But no, Rieu.
I'm saying, how did that happen?
It's what I call the Bocelli effect. Okay. It's like Andrea Bocelli all over again, except it's a violin.
Because I'm kind of wondering how you break through. Like, whoever his publicist is, presumably...
I know, he doesn't even have a gimmick. It's not like he has a disability.
Oh, he plays upside down!
It's not like he has a disability we can market to death.
Or that he's Bond and there's, like, four hot chicks.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, so.
They were actually pretty good.
They were very good, yeah.
And yeah, you're right, he's not Bond.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was a one-night-only event last Saturday.
Yeah, a one-night-only event.
It's the highest that one of these has ever been.
Yeah, because we've had them in the top 10 before, and this grossed 104,000.
Yeah, so this...
In one night. That's packed cinemas.
In one night, it made almost as much as Song of the Sea has made. So.
But he has this fan base. It's really, really strange.
Yeah.
Anyway, at two...
Three.
Or three, yes.
Let's just skip there.
At three is Ted 2.
Yeah, let's go to two. Well, here's two. Number two, precisely. Ted 2.
Ted 2, It's not the worst film that exists in the history of the world. It's just not great.
No. It's not A Million Ways to Die in the West.
That's like saying...
And to be fair, I don't hate A Million Ways to Die in the West as much as everybody else seemed to. Dog pile on. It's not good,
it's rubbish.
Okay, I wouldn't... Okay, yeah.
It's rubbish, but it's not offensively rubbish.
You're going to tie yourself up in explanations, so let's not.
At two... Minions.
Yay.
Which is just a money-making machine.
Small and cute, and they look like toys you can sell. Who'd have thunk?
Yeah, but this is the thing is, right, so we had a couple of... Last year we had the spin-off that was Penguins of Madagascar, right?
And that didn't do
that
very well.
That did not do as well as people expected. This, on the other hand, is tracking ahead of Despicable Me 2.
Yeah.
So, like, Gru's going back? No, we don't care.
They outgrew him, did they?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, everybody thought that when they saw Despicable Me, the first one, they thought, okay, they might like Gru, the kids are going to be cute, let's throw in the Minions, they look kind of cute, they're the thing.
They
got more time in Despicable Me 2, and then...
They got a massive plot in Despicable Me 2.
Yeah, there you go. And now suddenly, oh, the hell, let's just give them our own movie. It makes sense from a marketing point of view. And, well, there you go.
Despicable Me, the franchise, right, is the only thing that has made me like Russell Brand in anything. He's Dr. Nefaria.
No, yeah, he is. Yeah. But I mean, like, he doesn't really register. Yeah. I thought he was quite okay in Forgetting Sarah Marshall playing Russell Brand. Not so much Get Him to the Greek, just to be clear on that.
Yes. Oh, like, God, Get Him to the Greek. I watched that in the cinema. I can't believe I watched that in the cinema. Because when he's, like, touching the walls and so on.
Anyway,
at one.
His brand of craziness.
Yeah.
Stop. Move on.
Don't worry, revolutionary.
At one, Ant-Man. So, straight into the top.
What a surprise.
It's a Marvel film.
But don't worry, it didn't gross as much as the last 10 Marvel films. So we're going to talk about the death
of superheroes.
Yeah, because that's going to happen.
Yeah, because they don't have Captain America Civil War coming.
Yeah, or Batman Superman, or Suicide Squad, or Avengers.
Yeah, that's right. Cancel all superheroes and cancel Christmas.
Because Captain America Civil War is $1 billion movie when it happens.
Yes.
So,
Avengers 2.5, which is odd. We never thought you'd say that about Captain America film. Like, 10 years ago, I said Captain America 3 gonna be one of the biggest movies ever made.
If you had been charting the progress of it in Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2,
well, you know
Iron
me,
Man 3, and all the rest, right? So you have, and you're there, and up to the first Avengers movie, you're like, Iron Man is the heart and soul of this franchise, right? He's not. Captain America is the heart and soul of this project.
Because he is the good guy. He is the guiding light.
Captain America is testament to the fact that Superman can work.
I would argue
movie.
Thor.
Yes, you're right.
I would say Thor is actually a better Superman movie.
But both of them, you can do a light.
I prefer either
optimistic.
Thor or Captain America to Tony Stark, because Tony Stark is a douche.
But he's so overplayed. That's the problem, is that he was the breakout character for Marvel.
And that's all because of Robert Downey Jr.
And so Robert Downey Jr. has got stuck playing Tony Stark for the past 7 years.
And he
now
has no one to blame but himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's been, if you include the filming of it. So
Like, I mean, I don't know. It just.
Ant-Man manages to do something slightly different in the Marvel Universe. It brings it back, because it was the bombast was getting out of hand.
Yeah.
No.
Well, dropping cities on each other.
Yeah. So this manages
you'll
to
have
be
seen Age of Ultron, but I'll take your word for it.
A smaller film, and so therefore that's kind of
in
welcome,
every conceivable way.
In a way, you know, and the way the Guardians was welcome as a sort of palate cleanser as well. You know,
and again, the idea of the metaphor, like, you know, like Guardians being like the superhero as a way of arrested development, and Ant-Man being like as the metaphor for being the father that your daughter wants you to be.
Exactly.
I think it works on those terms.
No, I enjoy Ant-Man. I think it's good. I think it's an enjoyable time at the cinema. I don't think it's the upper tier of the Marvel stuff, but I think it's fun.
Yeah.
I'm all
for fun.
You can hear the air quotes over the. Over the podcast.
Oh yeah, when I make air quotes, you're going to hear them.
There is talk about the fact that Ant-Man underperformed, and and as a result, you know that no, but as you
yeah,
know,
no,
but
no,
more that it's not going to make back money. Of course, it's going to make back money. This thing is going to make.
Michael doesn't command those big paychecks anymore.
Yeah, well, not anymore.
It's just weird. Anyway, we'll move on from the top 10 to what's out this week.
So, this is an interesting list.
Yeah, it's an intriguing list. There's a couple of ones that I identify small films. Then there's a couple
one
of,
fairly significant.
There's
one.
There's one massive one. There's a big Irish one, and then there's
another good one.
Yeah,
and some not. But let's okay.
Some more good than others. Right, we'll start with the small one. We'll start with Best of Enemies, which is on in the IFI.
Ah, Gore Vidal.
Yeah, I mean Gore Vidal. Why not?
you're making it sound like we don't know a lot. No, it's
a documentary about the debates, isn't it?
Between him and William F. Buckley. And I was talking with somebody about this earlier, and they were wondering about recommendations of movies about debates. And as soon as I started thinking about it, I realized there aren't all that many, because it's not a very cinematic device.
No. No, it really
can't,
isn't.
Well, just to put you on the spot, can you think? Name me one.
Frost Nixon.
That's not a debate, that's an interview.
Okay, fine. That episode of The West Wing. That's not a movie, but
the
still.
Debate.
The debate.
That's very good.
That's very well made.
Yeah.
That's what I got. Oh, is there not one about kids?
See, the problem.
Oh, that Denzel Washington.
The Great Debaters. That was the only one I can remember. That's the earlier question.
The only thing that courtroom dramas are similar.
Yes,
but they're
not—they're
pulpier.
In terms of the one protagonist against another protagonist, the courtroom drama is essentially a debate in some ways.
In a way, but again, there are more perhaps immediate stakes pitched into a courtroom drama.
Yeah,
literally life or death.
Well, this has got Kelsey Grammer, John Lithgow. You know,
it's a great cast.
Yeah, Gore Vidal, of course, and Noam Chomsky.
Noam Chomsky is an astonishing man to watch. Just, there's an intelligence, or an aura of. I mean, we know he had, he's one of the great minds, great philosophers of modern time, but there's a wisdom around him.
One of the things this reminds you of, the fact that, you know, that it's shown documented, shown debates that were aired on American television in the 1960s, is that you just don't see that anymore. We have so many channels now, but none of them actually show this sort of stuff.
Well, because nobody would watch them. Yeah. I mean, which is a terrible reflection on us as human beings. Well, no, you know, like, I mean, you'd argue, like, the way television has evolved, it's a populist medium. It's much more immediate than film.
No, but that's the thing, that the people, the great... the great cinema, or the great television personas of the early ages of cinema, your Murrows and your Cronkites and all those, they couldn't exist in this.
Yeah, in this 100,000 channel nothing on world.
And for God's sake, we can't.
Real Housewives of New Jersey. Got to make room for that.
Right. We can't even believe Brian Williams anymore.
Well, I didn't believe him before. An American news presenter, yeah.
We'll always have Wolf.
Yes, I suppose.
I'm sorry, but the day that Wolf Blitzen is accused of something, I'm done. I just
always love the name. Like, Wolf Blitzen, no matter what he does, that would be, like, the best name.
Wolf Blitzen, attorney at law, would be amazing.
I would watch that show.
He wouldn't sound out of place in a Michael Bay movie, would he?
Yeah.
So anyway, I say...
possibly played by Mark Wahlberg.
I say
Nicolas Cage is Wolf Blitzen.
I say check this out if you're a fan of the documentary form, and there is, there's something to be said about. It speaks to a time period of in America and in.
Whenever I see these kind of footage, black and white debates, and people are sitting like, in armchairs with a table in between, I always think of that episode of The Simpsons when Bart ends up watching Classic Krusty. Good evening. My guest tonight is George Meany. It's a pleasure to be here, Krusty. Let me be blunt.
I was going to say good night and good luck type thing.
Oh, there we go. There's a good
Wow, I love that film.
Yeah. Everybody should love that film. In fact, the only reason you shouldn't love that film is because you haven't seen it, so go see it.
Yeah.
What he said.
So also out in the IFA is the aforementioned Robert Carlyle debut drama, The Legend of Barney Thompson.
In which he plays dramedy.
Dramedy, that's it, exactly, yeah, so...
A comedy about serial killing, because, you know.
As you do. But the cast, Emma Thompson, Ray Winston, Robert Carlyle, I mean,
it's got mixed reviews, I wonder why. That kind of tonal mishmash, that sounds like a negative in and of itself, but... you can do it, but it's extremely tricky. And I think, especially if you're going to be a debut director, you better have some big cojones.
I think it speaks to the area, because it's set in East Glasgow, where he's from and stuff. So.
Yeah, well, I'd give it a chance, because, you know, I just don't want to argue with Begley.
Please don't hurt me. So, yeah, well, we'll see. I don't know if I'll get a chance to catch it. But what I did get a chance to catch is Eden. Which, me too. Yeah, Eden is very good.
Great soundtrack. I believe
amazing soundtrack. Well, it's basically about the
it's about the rise of
electric music in France.
Electronic pop.
Yeah, so basically Daft Punk are there in the background all the time.
They're a running joke actually about how they can't get into clubs, but it tells the story of fictionalized take on the time, telling the story from the point of view of this one DJ who's trying to make it in this scene. And what I like about Eden is
it's uncompromising in its depiction of that world. And
I think what I like about it is it pitches that world and the difficulties of trying to make it in the music industry, as an example. But you know, point to almost any artistic industry, it's pitching it almost as a representation of a kind of arrested development, because here's this DJ, and he's living this lifestyle where. Yeah, he's getting into clubs and he's getting to perform, and like he's at the forefront of a scene which is giving birth to people like Daft Punk. But at the same time,
there's a relentless monotony to it.
Exactly, because he's it's not allowing him to. It's an industry where it's very difficult to progress. Throughout most of the film, he's still living at home with his mother. She's still having to bankroll a lot of his his activities. And it suggests that the DJ, he's played by actor Felix de Givry, he has this very youthful look. At one point, later on in the film, he's been carried home drunk. And this old woman looks at him and says, "Oh, the youth today." And he drunkenly yells back at her, "I'm 34! And it's just that idea that...
Yeah, but he's you can get an eternal youth. Yeah, it's part of the scene.
Yeah, know? It's like an idea that your passion, you better be committed to it because...
It could kill you.
It could. Well, it's not quite kill you. It just mightn't take you as far as it hoped. And that is... Well, that's an unfortunate truth of any passion, really, if it isn't going to pay. Oh, that's very down. Which isn't a fair representation of Eden. No, it's actually a very enjoyable film.
It is. Because of that, there's a propulsiveness to it because of the soundtrack. And
the energy.
It starts quite stark. The opening is, like, quite, you know, jarring. And you're... With the mist and the fog and all
you're in the middle of a club, basically. Yeah. But then the story starts to unfold.
And you get to understand what's happening and all the rest. And I recommend it.
It's got a lot of attention for its director, Mia Hansen-Løve. This is her fourth feature. And almost definitely her best reviewed yet. And certainly be her most popular, I should hope. But I like it. It has there's an energy to it, even though plot-wise it unfurls rather slowly.
It is. It's too long. It's the biggest criticism that can level against it. It's 1:31. So you're looking. Yeah, 1:31. So 2 hours and 11 minutes long. It has this thing where it's like act one, and you're like, oh, grand. And then you're an hour and a half into the film, and it's like act two, and you're like, oh, dear God.
I thought they'd forgotten about this.
I had thought they'd forgotten
about it. But that's all kind of comes from this pace where. You know, at what point is anything going to develop? Is anything going to happen?
That's true.
Comes from that idea of, you know, how long can you keep this going, or before you know, suddenly, the next act has to start. This is all starting to sound very analytical and pretentious, but yeah, that's what I read into it.
Yeah.
And for that, I enjoyed it.
No, it is. I really enjoyed it. Showed up Jadeve, and
especially if you're into the music in any way, it's a must see. And you should be into Daft Punk because, you know, Daft Punk.
Who isn't, in fairness? So there's a new Jake Gyllenhaal movie. Yeah?
Old Southpaw.
Southpaw,
yeah.
Yes.
Right. Did it give you pause?
Is it going south?
He's a boxer. He is, he's after bulking up to something incredible. He looks amazing.
Yeah, and the consensus critically appears to be it was for naught.
Yeah, that he's very good, but that the film is not so much.
Yeah, but
so it's like a lot of Jake Gyllenhaal films.
True, pretty true. I would say that for Nightcrawler, but Nightcrawler is supposed to be at least better than this.
No, Nightcrawler. I like Nightcrawler. I like Nightcrawler.
I like it too, but just I don't think it's particularly great, but it's good. This on the other hand, I don't. It looks okay. He plays a boxer. What else can anybody tell me about the plot besides that? It just sounds like so many
all
other.
You need. Shortcut to shortcut to being taken credibly as an actor, play a boxer. Mark Wahlberg tried it,
and it worked out better for Christian Bale than him. But oh well, but that at least had something different. It had that dynamic between brothers. It had that story. This looks like every other boxing cliche movie.
Yeah, well, this is he's doing well. He's about to retire.
Last fight.
Something happens.
Which is the plot to every movie.
Something happens, like to say that something happens, you know, is to ruin something bad happens, and so he gets into a spiral of self-destruction, and then his
boxing
is his way
seeking redemption.
Back out.
Yeah, good God.
Forrest Whitaker is his trainer, so you know.
Oh Lord!
There was a time when I was really excited to see Forrest Whitaker, and now I just feel like, because he's always great.
It keeps picking rubbish.
Antoine Fuqua trying to find a way back to being, you know.
Yeah, but
Training Day.
But then again, Training Day is. I like Training Day, but not because necessarily of anything Fuqua does. It's because
Denzel Washington.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of Fuqua stuff. there's just nothing particularly.
Frankly, you don't give a fuck one.
Exactly.
Skirting the censorship line.
Really, PG-13.
Yes.
It's from the director of Training Day, King Arthur, and Olympus Has Fallen. What do you want?
Wow. That's a great DVD blurb.
Oh yeah, they can put me on the DVDs. Put me on the put. Gladly.
Also out this week.
We're building up.
Because we're going to end with the big one.
But this sounds interesting. Go on.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is back. So
again.
Yes, with Abigail Breslin in Maggie.
This sounds strange.
It sounds weird and interesting, if not necessarily good.
Yeah. Yeah. Arnold Schwarzenegger plays the father of a girl who's been infected by a zombie-like virus.
Yeah, he's a farmer, I believe, isn't he?
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, well, you know, working the land.
Yes, because they all talk like this in the Midwest.
Yeah, so she's infected with something that turns her into a zombie, a cannibalistic zombie, the best type of zombie.
But it's a slow acting.
As opposed to those catatonic zombies, they're not much fun.
I was going to go for those vegan zombies.
Yeah, they're...
Yeah, but it turns her into that slowly, so he's watching this.
Her humanity fade.
Exactly.
I mean, it's an interesting concept. It's not.
It's also.
Are you sure that you want Arnie?
Very clearly a I can possibly act role,
and
which is very weird for an actor of his age to
take.
The word
on this is apparently he can. It's just pity the film doesn't do a whole lot to back him up in that.
Yeah, I'm actually quite disappointed at the critical response to it because it's not strong one way or the other. It's just like
no, but they all agree that Arnie actually isn't half bad.
Yeah.
That it's directionless is the biggest problem, which is God love.
Well, I think that's an easy trap to fall into because you have Arnold Schwarzenegger and he actually looks like he gives a damn.
Yeah, playing against type, like playing massively against type. Even though there are zombies in the film, you don't expect him to be tending for his zombie daughter.
This is the directorial debut of the guy who's he worked as like. Title designer on various different things, main and end title designer on Rango and on The Hangover Part 2 and The Help and Fright Night and stuff. So
to give him his credit, he has a name, Henry Hobson.
Yeah, so.
But, that's a big film.
Yeah.
You're directing Arnie.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's giving you a half decent performance, you're probably thinking, well,
the rest of the film is fine.
Yeah.
I feel it's kind of a little sad watching the Arnie attempt at a comeback. I
thought once he went into politics we were done and I would have happily left it at that. But no, he had to come back. And now I'm finding it even harder than ever to take him seriously.
Yeah.
Because at least back in the mid-90s, he didn't want to be taken seriously. He made Jingle All the Way in Junior, for Christ's sakes.
But there's also, there's, as you say, a strange sense of desperation that he should feel the need that he has to come back, you know? Like, I mean, retiring while you're on top, there's something to be said for that.
I think he's trying to pull an Eastwood.
Yes. Which is something that requires,
you to be Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
To have that talent.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't say that as if Schwarzenegger's not talented. I think Schwarzenegger's great at what he does.
But Eastwood knows himself so well.
Yes.
And he's
also talented in ways that people would never have expected looking at his early work.
Exactly.
I'm not sure you can say the same of Arnie.
This is like Arnie trying to say, go ahead, analyze my career.
Yeah.
Cool. So, on to the Irish release of the week. This is Mark Noonan's directorial debut, You're Ugly 2.
Same to you.
So it won...
quick question. Do I have to see You're Ugly 1 first?
So this won best first feature at the FLA there a couple of weeks ago. And stars Aidan Gillen and Lauren Kinsler. Aidan Gillen is a criminal who's let out of jail on compassionate leave to look after his niece. The niece is played by Lauren Kinsler. And so it's a... semi-road movie, semi-sort of family drama.
Yeah. With apparently, a great revelatory performance.
Yeah, no, Lauren Kinsler is getting all of the praise for her.
You can see why, even from the trailers, she's going up against Aidan Gillen, who is a bit of a, he's a presence on screen in and of himself. So to go up against that, it's impressive. And, it looks actually quite sweet.
It's a quite...
A bit foul-mouthed, but
quite
sweet.
Quite little movie. You know, it doesn't do anything new, but it's good. It's very well acted, and it's what you want in a 78 minute long film. It's in and out and done, and
not as saying it's welcome.
And a pleasant experience while you're watching it. So and I hope that it does really, really well, and that it leads to bigger and better things for Noonan. Yeah. So.
We can hope. I mean, we'll keep an eye on the charts next week. Breaking top 10 would be fantastic.
Quite an accomplishment this time of year.
Yeah.
But, who knows? I mean,
Well, look what else we have coming up. But then again, different markets.
Then movie of the week. This got 4 stars on your early two got 4 stars on Scanon, but getting 5
is a rare achievement.
Yes, and it is Pixar's Inside Out. So this is Pixar
finally almost
at their best. It's pretty damn close to the best,
which is a close fan for a long time.
Yeah. And I think that you need to be a bit further away before you can conclusively say one way or the other.
But it's
up there,
pretty damn close. It's
I mean, it's not going to quite hit, say, like the last time they really scaled this out was Toy Story 3. And before and since that, I think they struggled a bit. And I know that sounds like sacrilege. I've been on record before saying I'm not as big a fan as most people, say, of Wall-E.
Wall-E's in my top five. Up is in my top five.
Pixar films, or?
Yeah. Okay. Toy Story 3 is in my top five.
Yeah.
Jesus, but it's like a mally to get in there. It's like.
But compared to their most recent output, Brave, Monsters University, Cars 2, it's a definite big, big, big step in the right direction.
Not a big step. It's a massive leap. It's like scaling mediocrity in a single bound. It's incredible.
It's also Pete Docter back in the director's chair. Pete Docter made up.
And
this guy knows what he's doing.
And he wasn't fired during production as well. Always a good sign when it comes to Pixar films.
So we have The Good Dinosaur coming out later in the year.
He started working on this as Up was being released. So it's that long in...
Well, I can understand that. It's like, as a core concept goes, it's something that could be a lot more difficult than it turns out to be.
Yeah, so the basic plot of Inside Out sees an 11-year-old girl move from her home in Minnesota to San Francisco, and she has to deal with that move. And
with her family, you should point that out.
Yes, because of course. Yeah. And she has to deal with that move. And
Cool family. Her parents are voiced by Diane Lane and Kyle MacLachlan.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Great parents.
And how we the audience are treated to her emotional journey from due to this change in her life is we're inside her head with the five emotions who are in charge of running the show. So there's joy and sadness and fear and disgust
and anger.
Yeah, so they're all personified, so they're anthropomorphic personifications, and they're
great.
They're hilarious. Some of them are just brilliant.
Yeah.
And all of the mind is visualized, so there's different islands. There's memory banks, which are basically gigantic library shelves with the memories.
There's abstract thought, there's deja vu.
There's deja vu.
There's also the train of thought which runs and brings certain...
But you've got no idea knowing where it'll go.
Yeah. And each of the sort of key moments in her life forms an island, and the island form the person. So
from the personality.
From the personality, yeah. So they're
and the emotions are there running the show.
But I mean,
it's all very... interesting.
There's a lot of thought into this.
Yeah.
But I mean, and you say that, and you talk about it, and it's the kind of thing that when you talk about it, it sounds complex, but the visual language of the film is astounding in terms of how it conveys that information in a way that's intuitive and logical, and is something that kids can easily understand. Like, for example...
The colours in it.
Like the colouring of memories, so as to indicate which emotion they're most associated with, whether those are happy
on the characters,
whether the memories are happy or sad, the way that the memories are sort of filed and sorted through at the end of the day, they're processed.
Yeah. It's taking basic ideas, like something as simple as colour, to delineate complex ideas about, you know, memories and emotions and how the two interplay with each other.
Yeah. Again, it's very much a core Pixar film in that it's about the end of childhood and the sort of the idea that growing up is not necessarily a pleasant experience, even if it's a necessary
and
one.
That certain things. I mean, it's the second Pixar film to have this sort of theme, where Monsters, Inc. ended with "you don't always get what you want," and that's not the worst thing in the world, you know?
Unlike Cars 2.
Yeah, Monsters University had that idea that they got kicked out of the university and they didn't get to be what they wanted, but they've worked out their way
they around got around
it. And got to where they wanted to be. And this has the idea that it's okay to be sad.
Yeah, well, which I think is great. Feeling bad is not being bad, which is a great thing to tell a child. Because
it's okay.
We've all been through teenage years. Like, imagine if somebody had actually told you, instead of like putting on a smile, pretend to be happy.
Cheer up.
Turn that frown upside down. Yeah. Actually saying, it's okay for you to feel sad because...
Here's Robert Plant and The Cure.
Yeah.
Knock yourself out.
Yeah. You'll get through it in about 6 years, you know? I like how you patted Phil on the back during that conversation.
No, he's right. I mean, as far as this film goes, sadness is my power animal.
Yeah. No, I think it's very mature and very considered. I mean, it's the kind of thing, though, that Pixar have always done. I mean, it's there in Up. Like, it's there.
The first 10 minutes of Up are...
A microcosm.
Of emotion. This is it writ large. Inside Out is... It's very good.
It's phenomenal. Yeah. And in terms of...
I think we're all just trying to where exactly in our... In our chart of Pixar films.
It's not in my top five currently, but it's knocking on the door. And
I would say probably about four or five for me.
Yeah, so.
Although I think I find that I always underrate them until I watch them again.
Yeah.
Which is great, a great exercise that everybody
should. I defy you to rewatch Cars 2 and say that.
But it's important never to judge your friends, even when they're insensitive, vain, self-centered, and arrogant. That's just them being themselves, and you have to tolerate that. That's what a real friend does.
Well, that's why we're all here.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Love you guys.
You know how to make me feel really good.
But Inside Out is...
It's great.
Yeah. And it's something that absolutely has to be seen.
Yes.
Yeah. It's and for anyone on the cusp of adolescence...
Yes.
Or it is paramount that they see this.
Yeah. Forget your paranormal romance franchises or anything else. Bring your tweens to Inside Out.
I love the idea of... Because I'm old enough that I miss the Pixar thing. Like, imagine growing up and these were your films. Because, I mean, we all have, like, our Disney films
Because we're all of a similar age. We all grew up in the...
Disney Renaissance of the 90s.
Yeah, we had Lion King,
Beauty and the Beast.
Aladdin.
Yeah.
We had that, so we... You know,
we did okay.
Yeah, we weren't deprived. Okay. You know?
I know, but I'm just saying, imagine if instead of those it were Pixar, in terms of, like, just the level of maturity and so on. Because I think that even they do have something beyond, say, The Lion King, or beyond The Lion King.
Oh, they do. Oh, no, they operate at a level...
Well, they operate... Yeah. I think they operate on a level that's more identifiable.
Yeah.
Well, The Lion King had a great story about
the
lions.
The Lion King...
I do, I can say The Lion King is my favourite Disney film.
Same here.
Hamlet, but with lions. And also, pro gay marriage. Like, it's a story about how two sort of male unlikely partners, raise the perfect child.
Yeah, and
there's a
grandeur and a great emotional heft in that sense, The Lion King. Whereas Pixar, it's about a little girl. It's ultimately for all these great emotional characters. It's just a little girl.
It's led by a female protagonist, which is so rare. Like, as well, you know,
and you could be referring to either the little girl or to joy.
Or sadness. Sadness is as much a lead as joy.
All of the key characters are female. Anger and fear
are the two most prominent males. Yeah. No, disgust is female, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but they're more like...
But they are secondary too. And the dad is secondary.
Yeah, Bing Bong, is it, or what's his name?
Yeah.
He's the most prominent male character, is her imaginary friend.
Yeah, he's voiced by Richard Kind.
It's amazing.
This is weird for me, but my three favourite characters in any films this year are all animated.
Okay, hit us.
Menawara, the servant from Princess Kaguya.
Okay. Nice, yeah.
Bing Bong.
Okay. Oh.
And Sadness.
Oh, and two from the one.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd have Bing Bong now, but
Bing Bong's great. Bing Bong's arc is... And then that's the kind of thing that you get with the kind of thing that you imagine... Like, if this were Disney in the 90s, people would be going, you can't play that arc out to its logical conclusion.
Because those films, whether Lion King, Beauty and the Beast, they're taking classic stories, whether fairy tales or Hamlet, and they're sticking to that.
Yeah.
Fair enough, they're great stories, but this is something altogether more relatable, more human.
There's one thing that I saw in it that I was like, you did something brilliant there, but you didn't follow through on it. And it's when they're on the train of thought, and they... It's not spoiler alert for whatever, but they knock over a box, and the two boxes, one contains facts, one contains opinions,
and then they
put them back randomly in each box. But it doesn't go anywhere. I wanted it to come back later on with her obstinately arguing something in the classroom.
I wanted her to grow up to be Sarah Palin. You're going to mix up facts and opinions.
Or a film critic.
Just for that moment in the classroom where she...
But no, like...
I smell a sequel.
But the... But I mean, like, the joke works out very well because I think Bing Bong says, they're similar enough anyway.
Yeah.
I can't tell the difference.
No, I know it does, but it would have been brilliant had they called back to it just for...
You're nitpicking now.
I was personally disappointed that we didn't get a losing a train of thought pun.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was
my all about the puns.
Well, yeah, it is. It's a gigantic visual pun. How can I not love this? Like, most, like, memory banks, trains of thought, abstraction and deconstruction and reconstruction. How could I not love that film? Yeah.
And oh, I mean, it's the exasperated guy who's building the House of Cards.
Yes. but yeah, so you should go see this film. It's brilliant, it's clever, it's innovative, but it's fun and it's accessible and it's, yeah.
I've seen it already, I might have to go again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm definitely going again.
Yeah. And it'll be a Blu-ray. It's quite possibly the family Christmas movie, unless we watch Kingsman again.
On that note.
Yes, we'll leave it there for the week. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you guys.
Bye.
Bye.